Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody out there in listener land. This is Coach Penn, and you're on Third and Long. I have actually a bunch of stuff to go over this show. I actually didn't want to do the show this week because nothing was going on, and I needed another break. And I saw that Coach Tramer took a break after one show, so I was like, hey, maybe I can take one too. And then all this stuff happened, and I was like, hey, I can't cancel now. There's too much stuff going on. So I have a lot of things to talk about, and before I really get into it, I want to throw this out there for those of you who haven't been to the NWFA website. Yes, there were a lot of announcements on this past week about the thing that I'll get into later, but now there's a new one on there. The NWFA, which is womensfootballcentral.com, has this announcement. Women's Winter Football Association announced. And I'm going to read it, so please bear with me for a second. The National Women's Football Association has announced the formation of a Women's Winter Football Association. Okay, tongue twisters all through this, right? The association initially will be made up of several leagues established in the state of Florida. Leagues are being formed in North Florida, the Panhandle, East Coast, West Coast, South Florida, and Central Florida. Teams can join whichever league is best for them geographically and will play only those teams. Each league will host its own championship and make its own rules. By creating several rental leagues, the NWFA feels it can substantially reduce the players' cost of travel and encourage cross-town rivalries. So there will be no overnight travel, and cities can host more than one team. The new teams are also being offered player groups for ownership, and interested parties should contact the NWFA for details. There's no cost to own a team. Instead, there are annual dues to be part of the Women's Winter Football Association. While the NWFA will still run the Spring Women's Football League on a national level, these winter leagues will give women who want to play football an opportunity to do so at a time of the year that is better for attracting fans and team support in Florida. Quote, it's been a struggle for Florida teams to attract players, sponsors, and fans since the weather was so hot. Now with the opportunity to play when the weather's gorgeous and the snowbirds are in town, we think they'll see a big increase in their bottom lines, states NWFA CEO Catherine Masters. Tryouts are scheduled for the end of the month for the North Florida League. For start a team or for more additional information, please call Dave Freeland, numbers listed, or the NWFA National Office. All right, so this kind of confused me. Now, this is me talking now, so let's talk about what that just said. Just so you know, everybody knows, for those of you unfamiliar with Florida, Florida is the only state that I know of that actually has high school women's football. It is a flag league, but it is a recognized sport by the Florida High School Sports Athletic Association. They actually have a championship game and everything. So Florida football for women is big, and ESPN just had a big thing, which state is more popular or recognized for men's high school football, and Texas beat out Florida in the championship game. Well, obviously, when it comes to women, Florida proves that football is pretty damn big in Florida because they actually have organized Florida football for women's, and this is at a high school level. So by what the NWFA is saying is that this is what I gather from it, and I could be wrong, and hopefully I'll be able to get in touch with Catherine Masters and find out more about it. But they're saying, guess what? Everybody, you can have your own team, play whatever teams you want, and not worry about being in any particular league unless you want to create one, as long as you pay us and you'll do. Why not just play football and not pay anybody? I mean, if you're basically being told you can have your own league and play whoever you want, why would you pay dues to be in an association? I don't understand. What are they doing for you? So I guess that's the background information that I want. What is the Women's Winter Football Association going to do for you? So that's what that was my quick little thing, since I just read that and it wasn't on there earlier today when I was looking at all of my stuff. So the big news that the ladies on Sunday show broke was the fact that Catherine Masters disbanded or kicked out or released, however you want to word it, the fact that the West Coast operations of any teams in the NWFA are gone. They don't longer in. They're no longer in the NWFA. So that's what we're going to discuss next. And this is Third and Long with Coach Penn. If you're looking to call in, the number to call in is going to be, I can't really see it on my phone right now. So that's fun. Maybe put it up there. Well, if you're actually on listening, you can actually see the number, but it's 347-826-7278. You can call in, chit-chat, throw some questions out there. Don't forget there's a chat button on the right-hand corner where the little player is. You can hop in there, hop in the chat room, and if you want, talk with myself, BJ, and other guests in there and comment on what's going on. And if you don't feel like hopping on the air, you can throw some questions in there. There's a guest on right now, and Spider's on as well. Spider may have some things to say about some college football that I have later. But right now, we're going to delve into the whole announcement by the NWFA to discontinue West Coast operations, which they really didn't have an operation out here. They just had a couple teams. So let's see what teams are looking for a home. They were the Marana She Devils, the LA Amazons, the Phoenix Prowlers, and that's it, right? Those are the only four West Coast teams. Oh, and the Ventura Black Widows that had not played a game yet. So they had those teams that were signed up and ready to play for the NWFA, and they're now looking for a home. Because of the way they announced this so late, the IWFL, I think, has already basically started their schedule, and it may be too late to join the IWFL. So these teams are most likely going to either choose to not play or join the WFA, because I believe the WFA is still picking up teams, because they only have six of them last week. Well, this week, it's the Showgirls were finally announced. They are going to play 2009 football. Congratulations. Dion will be able to take his very good team and compete with some teams on the West Coast, such as Coach Bartley's California Lynx, whose tryouts is this Saturday, I believe. So check out the California, I think it's CalLynxFootball.com. Not really sure, but if you go to the Women's Football Alliance, you can check on the teams there and get their direct websites. But two teams have already been announced from, since they were let go from the NWFA, and they've already been announced that they are in the WFA. That is the Marana She Devils and the Phoenix Prowlers. Now, the Phoenix Prowlers, I think, have a problem with the way the NWFA or the IWFL wants their team structured. That's why they chose them. I believe that's the rumor I heard, so don't quote me on that. That's just what I've heard. The Marana She Devils, there is already a Tucson team in the IWFL, and I believe they are very close to Tucson. I'm not very sure of the geographical location of Marana, Arizona, but I think they're both relatively in the Tucson area. So that was their choice instead of merging with the Tucson Monsoon. They are their own team. That leaves the Ventura Black Widows and the LA Amazons. And I would love for the Amazons and or the Black Widows to be in the IWFL. Since I'm a West Coast team, it'd be great. I mean, I haven't played Duncan. My teams haven't played Duncan in a long time. I think 2005, the last year the Long Beach Aftershock was in effect. That was the last time we played them, and that was a pretty good game. It was 13-7 before the Transformer blew and the lights went out. But that was a – I mean, I always enjoyed playing them team, and it's they've just gotten better every year, and it would be nice to see them. But I can almost guarantee you by the end of this week, both the Ventura Black Widows and the LA Amazons will be in the WFA, and that will make for one heck of a West Coast division with the California Lynx, which is an Orange County-based team, Las Vegas Showgirls, Phoenix Prowlers, Marana She Devils, LA Amazons, Ventura Black Widows. That's a pretty good division right there, and I don't care whether you agree with the new league or not. That's a great division. That is a very good division, and I look forward to seeing the competition and catching some of those games. Couple news on the WFA. So the WFA is picking up teams left and right, and they haven't announced any of them. And if you listen to the show with the ladies on Sunday, you were able to hear, who was it, the owner or GM coach of the Empire State Roar and the Delaware Queen Bees on there. They're both near. Coach Evans, yes. Coach Evans and them were talking about the WFA and the new teams that he could and could not announce. So I thought it would be interesting to kind of check it out. The Gulf Coast Riptide. They are the Pensacola Power. The Pensacola Power, I guess, were released. Their name and likeness was released from the NWFA, so now they're finally called the Pensacola Power instead of the Gulf Coast Riptide. They don't have to get new uniforms or change all of their business cards, if they have any. The New Orleans Blaze, both of those teams came from the NWFA, and both of those teams are Southeast teams. Now, I know that one of the coaches mentioned that there were two more teams already lined up for the Southeast. So that makes two divisions right there. The Northeast looks to be set. He couldn't announce all the teams on Sunday, but here they are. Delaware Queen Bees, Empire State Roar. We already know those two. The Philadelphia Liberty Bells are now reborn from members of the Philadelphia Phoenix from the NWFA who did not go to the Firebirds of the IWFL. Got me there? Good. Keep up. The New Jersey Titans from the NWFA, the Baltimore Burn from the NWFA, and the Connecticut Cyclones from the Exhibition IWFL. So that wasn't even a full team that they got. So that's the Northeast Division. They said now what was said and nothing's been announced, at least as of today, and today's Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. What is it? Third and Long, Coach Penn, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. As of today, those have been announced, but this was mentioned. So there is a Central Division as well. And Toledo and Indiana are both already committed. That's what was said, so I'm only quoting what was said. They said they have four more teams lined up, so there's six teams that have not been announced on some form of, I guess, outlet, media outlet. Toledo and Indiana have been said, but they haven't been publicized yet. So I'm wondering where these six teams are coming from. Most of the teams have come from the NWFA, with the exception of the X team from the Connecticut Cyclones and the non-renewed Las Vegas Showgirls. So, and that like I said, for those of you who want to know my feelings about that one, listen to last week's show, the last 10 minutes. I believe I got all my venting out then, and I don't want to go through it again. My blood pressure is a little high right now, okay? So, my thing is they have four divisions that have been mentioned. On their site, they have six regions listed. And I'm not sure if they're going to be able to fill all six regions because the IWFL is actually posting their schedule within a week or two, I think. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I know they're redesigning the website to list all of the new teams and the new alignments. And I believe the schedule is done, which is one of the reasons why I'm not okay with the NWFA, Catherine Masters, waiting so long when she knew she was going to disband the West Coast operations a couple months ago. If she had done this before, the IWFL could have actually went out and tried to recruit these teams. And I'm sure these teams already have their strong feelings on the IWFL and the WFA, and I'm not sure they could have swayed one team more than the other, and I don't disagree that there should be two leagues, because eventually the leagues will merge. I don't know if I'll still be coaching then, but eventually they'll merge. But the way the only way the WFA succeeds is if they get 20 to 40 teams. Otherwise, they're just another small league that's a joke. And I think these other six teams most likely will be brand new teams or are coming from the NWFA. If they come from the IWFL, I would be very surprised, but not shocked. I can see a couple of the smaller market teams going to the WFA because of the lower cost and possible less travel. Now, the West region looks like there will not be much traveling. You got two Arizona teams. Two Southern California teams. That's if the Amazons and Ventura Black Widows join the California League, so that'll make three. And then you have a Vegas team. So that's a pretty good triangle for traveling purposes right there. One of your home games or one of your away games will be really close, so that's also nice. And then let me see, what's the other division? Is the Northeast, which is set. The Northeast, we got New York, Delaware, Philly, Jersey, Baltimore, Connecticut. I mean, I didn't grow up in the Northeast, but those places can't be that far away from each other. I mean, it's a megapolis up there, so it's pretty close together. And, you know, anything less than a five-hour bus ride is nice. You know, the one I'm concerned about is the Southeast. I want to see what those other two teams are, because the Pensacola Power and New Orleans Blaze, I think that's about a three-hour trip. So depending where they get those other teams from, they could probably centralize that region, and then, of course, we have to wait for the central region to see and see if they actually come up with two more regions. So I'm very excited to see what the WFA can do, and I believe Spider had something to say about the whole WFA thing. The new teams are coming from the NWFA primarily, so I don't know if Spider wants to unmute. I know she had something to say. And so the WFA is on the rise. I mean, teams are joining, and it looks like they may be elite this year. I mean, at first, when they only had two teams listed, it was just a joke. So I'm convinced that they will have a season. I'm not sure how successful it is, but I wish them the best of luck. And hopefully, you know, with all that he is bringing, Jeff King, he is bringing to the table, I do wish them the best of luck, and hopefully, you know, because he is so open to working with other leagues, you know, that maybe him and the IWFL can have some games against preseason games or exhibition games against each other. And I know that would never work with the NWFA, but maybe it would work with the IWFL. Maybe there's not any animosity or competition there. It's just, you know, for the betterment of women's football. I don't know. I'm not in management of either league. I'm just a coach. So that's my opinion. So let me see. Spider hasn't called in. I was trying to get her to weigh in on Jeff King's league, the WFA. She had mentioned something to me earlier. And for those of you who do have anything to say before I move on to the next subject, it's 347-826-7278. And from there, my next topic was going to be college football. We had a big thing go down this weekend, and a big form of a game where you had to wake up early here on the West Coast. So if nobody has any opinions or thoughts on the whole NWFA, IWFL, WFA consolidation or competition, you know, I can move right along. So I will just do that now. I believe that Spider is calling in for the college football discussion anyways, so maybe I'll have her talk about that as well when she hops in. So first off, I want to be able to release the top 15 teams, but now that Spider is on, we'll hold that off for a second. Welcome to the show, Spider.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing my show, keeping my mind busy, you know what I'm saying? So, you had said something. What's up?
There's a delay.
Oh, there's a delay, okay. Maybe you should have came over then, because there wouldn't have been a delay last time there was a delay. All right, so.
No, I was just going to say about the WFA really quick. Is that I think it's interesting how the WFA is being formed and run by, you know, Jeff, the man, and then we have the NWFA and the IWFL being run by women. I just think after the first year, I'd be very curious as to see how it turns out and see if maybe it might even influence the NFL to even pay more attention to what's going on now that there's a man at the helm. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense. But what I don't like about the WFA website is every single picture that I can see on there is of a man. It's a women's sport. At least Photoshop some uniforms, or I mean, get some pictures from some of the teams that have already signed on. I mean, the bylaw thing is a man standing there, you know, and then they have the hands thing, which are obviously men's hands, and it's so funny to me that, you know, he's trying to promote this women's thing, but all of his graphics are men. I mean, they photoshopped the logo on the bat and ball, so why couldn't they, you know, do something to put the women's on there? That's kind of thing that kind of, I would think, would be a little bit offensive to some of the women out there, you know, that he's starting this great league, but yet he can't put pictures of women football players on there. That's the only thing. But, yeah, I mean, when was the last league you were in that was run by a man?
Carter Turner.
Yes, I believe those of you who know that name will get a good chuckle out of that. So now that she got to say what she wanted to say, you know, everybody else, thanks for listening. This is Third and Long with Coach Penn. We just finished the women's football discussion, and Spider's hopping in because she, like me, is a big college football fan, and we both got our asses out of bed, even though she was up a little bit later than I was, and watched the Oklahoma-Texas game on Saturday. And this was a 1-5 game, and I am by no means a Texas or Oklahoma fan, but having lived with Spider for a couple years, I've become a Texas fan and will always root for them, and it could only help that I hate Oklahoma. So we were both enjoying the game, and let me hear some of your thoughts about the game there, Spider.
Well, I thought that Texas came together as a team to beat Oklahoma. I think that Colt McCoy is finally coming around into his own and becoming the leader that they actually needed last year. You know, there were some huge momentum changes or key points in the game that helped spark Texas to a victory, like Oklahoma losing their linebacker and the fake punt stop that they accomplished. I mean, it was huge plays in the game and instances in the game that actually propelled Texas to win, I think. And once they started to put pressure on Bradford, Oklahoma was done, I thought.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I wanted to point out. The QB with the better stats, which was Sam Bradford, he threw 5 touchdown passes and had as good of a game as you can ask for in such a big atmosphere, got outplayed by a quarterback who had less stellar stats, but did exactly and everything that was needed to take his team to a victory. I mean, you basically do what the defense can give you, and once that middle linebacker went down with a busted knee, they exploited the middle of the field like nobody's business, and it just killed Oklahoma. The second thing is that Colt McCoy scrambled a lot, and his first 10 rushes were all negative yardage. And that probably looked bad on the stat sheet. But what it did is prove that he knew to take the loss and not throw a bad pass. Whereas Sam Bradford, he hasn't had pressure all year. And the few times that they did get pressure on him, they either sacked him for a huge loss or he threw an interception. It was the exact opposite with Colt McCoy. He would scramble, try and get as much yards as he could, and get tackled. And yes, he would lose a yard or two, but it wasn't like a 12-yard sack like the one Sam Bradford was taking. So I was kind of impressed that the better statistical QB got outplayed by a smarter quarterback, and I was very impressed by the play of Colt McCoy. So, and the fact that you bring up the momentum. And I disagreed with ESPN saying a game-changing moment, and they put the Shipley huge return, and it was 14-3. I was like, there was 80 more points scored after that. What are you talking about? How can that be a game-changing moment? But it did change the momentum, just like that fake punt changed the momentum. And by the way, that was number 18, who I've mentioned on this show before, Grisham, his fault and the punter's fault. Grisham stopped running to look to see where the punter was, and the punter then ran around him. If he would have just ran right into him and then pushed him forward, I know he wouldn't have been able to physically push him forward, but Grisham would have known, oh, I need to start pushing. He would have easily got it, probably by a yard. But because he had to run around him, that Texas speed caught him, and he was, you know, a foot short. So, I mean, those momentums and sparks that Colt McCoy gave them was just amazing, and I was glad that I actually did get to watch the game. And for those of you who missed it, poo on you. Poo on you. So, but before we hop into my previews for this week's games, I'm going to give you my top 15 real quick. And because of that big victory, in the neutral site, Texas now jumps to number 1. They got a big win, so they jumped big and deservedly so. But the big games keep coming. This week they have to play a Missouri team. Missouri dropped out of my top 15 because of their loss to Oklahoma State. They played horribly, and finally the question is answered. The best defense will usually win the game because both those offenses were stellar. But the fact that Oklahoma State's defense was better than Missouri's defense proved them they took them to victory. Alabama, with their bye, they stay at number two, and they have Ole Miss this week, and they'll try to do what UF couldn't. That's beat Ole Miss at home. Alabama's home, that is. Penn State stays number three, and they have Michigan this week, a team they haven't beaten in 9 years, but they are probably playing better than any team in the nation. So that should be an intriguing game, but it probably should be over by the first quarter. Oklahoma State makes a huge jump in my poll from 14-4 after beating Missouri, and they played really, really well. So I'm impressed with them. Baylor's a tricky team. Griffin III is getting better every game, and a mobile quarterback is Harden, and Chase Daniel is a mobile quarterback, but they have not seen anything like Griffin III yet, so that should be a pretty good game. 3-3 versus 6-0, you think State the whole way, but you never know. BYU moves up to number 5. They have TCU in their biggest game up to date, and they need to really focus because Texas Christian has the number 1 ranked defense in the country still, even after getting killed by Oklahoma. And after this game, we should be able to compare BYU and Oklahoma to see what kind of level BYU was on. Number 6, BYU's final opponent of the season, Utah. They have another BCS school coming up this week, Colorado State. Should be another win, or at least I think so. I mean, they shouldn't get tripped up there. Texas Tech is number 7. They have another easy game. Or so you would think. They barely got by Nebraska, but after the way Nebraska performed the week before, they had something to play for. So Texas Tech, wake up and make sure you're paying attention. You're playing Texas A&M. It's a rival school. Kill them. Or fall in the rankings, whatever you choose. Number 8, Boise State. They play Hawaii, who Hawaii stole a game from them last year. So they're pretty upset about that. But, you know, Hawaii's having a down year. But the Blue Turf Bandits need to take them seriously. Otherwise, they could get knocked out of the BCS title contention right away. Falling all the way to number 9, even though they only lost by 10 and it was really closer than that, is Oklahoma, my formal number 1. Heartbreak and disappointment, but a great name, great game nonetheless. They have a weakness. Get pressure on Bradford. He can't handle it, and it rattles him. Kansas, can you do that? I don't know. It's a big week. Kansas, if you beat them, you can pop back in the polls, and Oklahoma's out. And I would love to say that, but I just don't see it happening. Number 10, Georgia. They're staying there. They handled UT, which is Tennessee, but it's closer than it should have been. Can they get another one out against Vanderbilt in that tough SEC schedule that they have? Florida moves up 4 spots from 15 to 11. They have a bye this week, another one, and they deserve that bye because they just humiliated LSU on national television. They deserve to be off, relish in that victory, but concentrate on getting things done at practice and not thinking that is the end of your season because you are in the SEC and Georgia's coming up. Biggest game of the year for them. Number 12, making an entrance into the rankings, and I'm not sure if I did this because of who they play this week, but Michigan State. I said give it to Ringer. They did. They walked away victorious. This week will prove whether they are chump or challenger. Got Ohio State, and they need to do it. They have Ohio State, and Ohio State's offense has just been abysmal. And, you know, not everybody on the team is sold on Tyrell Pryor yet, the phenom. I mean, he's only a freshman. Give him some time. He's learning. But if he uses this game as a learning experience, they will be on the 2-game loss side and out of the national championship race where they deserve to be. Number 13, the team that Ohio State got crushed by, USC. They stay at 13. You know why? They beat an ASU team that wasn't very good. And they had 4 turnovers, and 3 of them by Sanchez himself. And anybody who mentions Sanchez as a Heisman candidate is completely biased. And it's just ridiculous. He is not Heisman, you know, there's even Bradford, who played really good but proved that he couldn't perform under pressure, should be listed well above Sanchez. I mean, I read some things this weekend that says Sanchez should be considered for the Heisman, and I'm like, no, he shouldn't. He's not for. If Leinart or Palmer were on that team would be really, really good, and their statistics would be just out the roof. And I'm not a USC person. I don't like Leinart, and I don't like Palmer. But they knew how to use their talent, and run the offense. He's getting by on the talent that surrounds him. Number 14, re-entering the polls, Wake Forest. They weren't that impressive against Clemson offensively, but they got it done, and now they are in control of their own destiny. And Clemson's a completely different story. Tommy Bowden got fired, let go, resigned. However you want to say it, he doesn't work there anymore. So that team is in disarray, but they won, and they have Maryland this week, which should be an interesting game. We'll get to more on that later. Number 15, another undefeated team, Ball State. They're undefeated and ranked in the other polls. And while their victories may be against a lesser quality of opponent, being undefeated deserves a ranking in college football. With the how hard it is to win all of your games, they deserve it, and congratulations to Ball State. Those are the teams that dropped out. Vanderbilt, LSU, and Missouri all dropped out after losses. People that can, you know, keep winning and work their way into it, Ohio State, beat Michigan State, and still show that you're the class of the Big Ten until you play Penn State, you know, you could probably get ranked. Virginia Tech has a BC coming up, North Carolina, Florida State, and Kansas. They can, you know, sneak out through over Oklahoma. They can rejoin the rankings. So, Spider, I'll welcome you back, and we'll talk about a few games. I know you said you weren't quite familiar with a couple of them, so we'll start with the first one that's on tomorrow night, BYTCU. How do you think that game plays out?
I think TCU wins.
Wow, she's picking the upset. She's thinking TCU wins. Based on the way that BYU's played the last couple weeks, I don't disagree with you. I still think they'll find a way to win, but I think it should be an interesting game to watch. Too bad it's going to be on my small TV, because I'll be watching the Florida State NC State game, you know, see if my Seminoles can go to 5-1 and keep running under the radar, because while they may not have much of a chance to win the ACC this year, I still want to see them back on the radar, because they're actually playing really well this year. Game number two, we have Mizzou, who's coming off a loss, against the new number one, Texas. And Texas needs to be wary, because the number one ranking hasn't been good to anybody this year. So I think Texas's defense is going to prove that Missouri's offense is just one facet of the game of football, and they need to really work on their defense. I expect them to win, and I expect them to win probably by a couple touchdowns if Colt McCoy can play the way he did. How about you?
Well, yeah, I think if the defensive coordinator, Muschamp, what, how you pronounce his name?
Yeah, Muschamp, that's right.
the key is, again, like you said, to put pressure on Daniels, which I don't think will be an issue. I think it rests on the defensive shoulders. I think offensively, I think that they're probably even, but I think the Texas defense is a lot stronger, and if they can get to Daniels, it's no problem.
Okay, well, there you go. There's her unbiased opinion, right?
Which, by the way, did you know this is Texas' first number one ranking in over 20 years?
Number one ranking in the AP poll, you mean?
Oh, yeah, in the AP poll.
Yeah, because they were number one in the BCS, but now the polls are, you know, done, so. When they won their championship, you have to be number one if you win the BCS championship. So, all right. Next game, Kansas-Oklahoma, another Big 12 game that's, you know, surprisingly enough, Kansas is 2-0 in the Big 12, and Oklahoma is 1-1. So a Kansas win basically knocks Oklahoma out of any BCS chance at all. Not just the championship game, but the BCS. They can't even be an at-large. I mean, there's too many people vying for that BCS Buster spot right now, so I think there's only going to be one at-large team, and we know Notre Dame's not going to get in. So, Kansas, I don't think can pull it off, but it should be a good game. How do you think this one plays out?
No, I agree. I think it'll be a better game than most people think, only because, Oklahoma's missing Reynolds right now. So, if Kansas can take advantage of the middle of the field like McCoy did, I think that it'll be a pretty good game.
Yeah, I think that's going to be everybody's point of emphasis now is to, you know, really pick on the middle. And I think if you get those safeties focusing on the menu or the middle and the outside linebackers to pinch more of the middle and not cover those flats or hooked curls, it's going to open up more of the passing game. And I think Todd Reesing is too, while he may be undersized, he's too smart of a quarterback not to know that. And I believe if I can figure it out, I believe their coaches should be able to just as well. So let's see. Vandy and UGA. By the way, the Mizzou game is a night game, so everybody should be able to see that one on ABC or ESPN. I think it's going to compete with the Virginia Tech BC game, so it depends on which region you live in, but that should be a good game. Vanderbilt's coming off a loss, and Georgia's coming off a win. Vanderbilt, congratulations on making it this far, but I kind of think they're going to lose. It's at Georgia, and, I mean, Fanny just really needs to win two more games, and they'll be bowl eligible, and I think that would make them happy. I really think they're blessed to be ranked as it is. I mean, I put them in the ranking last week. I really didn't, you know, expect them to stay there too long, but, you know, I love it when a small, smart school, kind of like Wake Forest, does good in football, but I think they fall out of the rankings finally when they lose to Georgia. What about you?
I think Georgia will win, but I think it'll be interesting now that Vanderbilt is starting their second string quarterback, I believe. Adams?
And, I don't remember his name, but yeah.
And then, you know, Georgia's hurting on the backside as far as the offensive line goes. Sorry, Stafford is going to have to watch his backside. But I think Georgia will win.
Because
I think they're playing like a four-string tackle now. Is that what it is?
Yeah. I don't know, but that's a long way down the depth chart right there.
It is.
Four-string is supposed to be special teams, not play. So next we'll move on to really the game of the week in the Big Ten. Probably, you know, the second best game of the week next to Mizzou and Texas. And that's Ohio State at Michigan State. This is a huge game in terms of the Big Ten. They need both of these teams to perform, at least play well, because if it's a boring or mistake-filled game, the Big Ten is just, I mean, that's they're only going to have Penn State left to rely on for anything. I mean, both teams already have a loss. Both of them are out of conference. Ohio State got blown out, proving that they have no speed, and Michigan State barely lost at California in the first week of the season, and they're looking to win seven games for the first time in something like 30 years. So, I mean, the odds are not with Michigan State right now, but because they have such a strong running game and can throw the ball, I think they have a good chance to beat Ohio State. Ohio State still wants to prove that they're the class of the Big Ten, even if they're not the class of college football. But Ohio State's as good as their defense is, they're going to have to put eight in the box to stop Ringer and force Michigan State to throw, and Michigan State can throw. I don't think Ohio State's going to be able to keep up on the scoreboard, because Michigan State's defense is not all that bad. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's getting better each and every week. Spider, what are your thoughts and feelings on this one?
I completely agree, because, you know, I don't think that – honestly, I don't think Pryor will be able to move the ball himself. I don't think, like passing-wise. So it's going to have to be a running game. So if Michigan State can contain those two on the ground, they've got to win. I think they'll win.
Uh-huh. Short and simple.
I think Michigan State will, you know, if they can force Pryor to make mistakes, which won't be hard as far as passing goes, Michigan State will pull out a win.
All right. Well, I have three more games to go over, but I got Robbie Robb wants to talk to me, and so I'm going to have BJ unmute him real quick and see what's on his mind, see what he would like to talk to me about. So, Robbie Robb, you're with Coach Penn on third and long. What's up this evening? You there? Just trying to, let me see. I don't see him on the board. Oh, there he is, Robbie Robb. Well, I don't know if he can hear me or not. Let me see. Oh, well, he said he's BJ says you're unmuted, so you can go ahead and talk if you got something to say. Nothing yet. Maybe he stepped away for a second. So if you do hear this, you know, let him know that I am listening for his voice. I'm going to cover the last three games. Spider had nothing to do with these games. She might have some opinions, but she left these games for me, and that's because I'm the ACC nut, because of Florida State. And there's actually three pretty big games in the ACC this week. We'll start off with North Carolina and Virginia. Most people may see this as a walk game. But North Carolina, every one of their games has been pretty close, and Virginia has won two in a row. So with Albro's job on the line every game, should be a pretty close game. And North Carolina has been quite inconsistent this year, so you just never know. I mean, and North Carolina lost their best receiver for the year, Brandon Tate, which I'm glad to hear, not because I like to see people get injured, because I don't want Florida State to have to play him. Our secondary fucking sucks. So let's see. We got Virginia Tech and Boston College, and both these teams are nowhere near as good as their record. Virginia Tech lost to East Carolina, which gets worse with every passing week and them continuing to lose. So Robbie Robb is still seeing him. He can hear me, but he can hear me, but I can't hear him. So, and I don't think anybody else can hear him either. So I guess his mic might not be working on his phone. Your phone might be muted, so you might want to check that out, and I'll continue with this. So Virginia Tech and Boston College are, you know, not as good as the records, but Virginia Tech is in control of its own destiny, so I think they can go up to Boston College and win, even though last time they went up there, 2006, they did lose. Virginia Tech has a very good defense, and that's how they play ball. Ball control football offense, and turnovers on defense and special teams play. So, third game, Wake Forest and Maryland. Maryland is the Jekyll and Hyde of college football right now. They are 2-0 against ranked opponents, beating Clemson and, what was the other team, California. So, 2-0, but they're 0-2 against teams that suck. So, they were just, you know, I don't really get it with them, but Wake Forest needs to get it because they're in control of their destiny right now. And it's just, to lose at Maryland, which I'm rooting for Maryland, but to lose at Maryland would really put a damper because then the pressure is on them because they can't lose again. They lose again, then, you know, Florida State can sneak right in if they keep winning. So, Robert, Rob, you on? Hey, there you are. I got
all
you.
Right. You got me now?
I got you, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. Great show. Good work. I'm enjoying the show here. But I want to go and talk to you about some Big 12 quarterbacks. I think.
Uh-oh.
Here's the big uh-oh. I'm giving the big O to OU because they're so overrated. Sam Bradford is the most overrated quarterback in the nation. I think Josh Freeman should get a lot more love than he's getting. And when you're a coach, you know what you're looking at when you
what
see
is Josh. Josh Freeman's with Kansas State, right?
Josh Freeman's with Kansas State, correct?
Yeah.
So
okay.
My question here, I mean, you're a coach, you know this stuff better than I do. So when you see Sam Bradford play, don't you get a sense that he's just surrounded with so much talent, and that's why he looks so good? Like these passes that he's throwing, wide open passes, he's getting like 5 touchdowns a game. His stats are inflated. I don't think he's any good. How about you?
I believe that he is a product of the talent they have, yes.
Thank you.
I do not think he is a bad quarterback. I think he has not been tested. And every time he has been tested, he hasn't necessarily failed, but he hasn't lived up or proven himself to be in the upper echelon. Now, I would consider him one of the better quarterbacks in the Big 12. Yes, I do believe that Freeman. I do believe that Freeman is a very good quarterback on a very bad team, sort of like Jake Locklear. Jake Locklear is a great quarterback for Washington, and he's just surrounded by an incompetent coaching staff and players. But, I think Sam Bradford needs to stay in school. I hope he doesn't come out as a junior because I think it's going to take 2 more years for him to really know what it is to be a quarterback because you need to be in those pressure-filled situations where people are chasing you and you have to make a decision, throw it away, run, or take the sack. And I think that was the difference in the game to me against Texas is that Colt McCoy didn't hurt his team as much as Sam Bradford hurt his.
You know, I also wanted to get your take on this further on Sam Bradford here because when I look at him and you look at his eyes, and I'm not there at the games, I'm just watching here on TV. When you look at him, he looks like he's not really in control of the situation. He looks like he's trying to figure out what he's doing out there. And as a coach, do you frown on that? Do you see like, geez, this guy doesn't have like command of the huddle?
Well, he is just a sophomore, And to me, I think Oklahoma is a team of thugs. And
being
one of the smaller people on his team, I don't see him taking charge of a huddle. I see him trying to be the silent leader, you know, and proving that he is the team offensive leader by way of wins and stats and touchdowns. There are different types of quarterbacks, and you know, I would. Peyton Manning is a very vocal. Dan Marino is a very vocal. But then you have your quarterbacks who just play the game, and I believe he's one of those types. He tries to lead by example and by doing what he can to take the team to a victory. I don't think he knows everything he can know about college football and running a college offense because of the talent he's surrounded. He doesn't have to work as hard as some of the people, and I'm not saying he does. That's not a knock on his film, his time in the study room, or his time at practice. This is a knock, and it's never been hard for him in his 2 years at Oklahoma because he's just surrounded by all of these great athletes and thugs. And I've never been a fan of Oklahoma because of their thug mentality. They remind me of the Miamis in the 80s. That's basically it.
And the final thing, I'll just listen to the rest of the show after this point that I want to make. When OU faced Washington this year, they were at Washington and they blocked the entrance so that the Washington football players couldn't get on the football field. I think they should have been fined, penalized. Something should have happened there. Like perhaps they shouldn't be able to go to a BCS bowl game. Maybe they'll get settled. Some sort of penalty. Like instead of going to a BCS game for doing that kind of thuggery, they should go play in, like, you know, the Bumblebee.net bowl.
Well, you know, that'll never happen, but, I mean, the same can be said for, I mean, you obviously have very strong feelings against OU, but the same thing can be said about the University of Georgia last year when they scored the first touchdown against the University of Florida, and because they lost so many in a row, they sent their entire team out there to celebrate. You know, that right there is great for the team, but it looks bad in the general scope of college football. And I agree with what Coach Mark Richt did because his team needed that. I don't necessarily agree with a team as big and as bad as Oklahoma doing that to Washington, a team that they know they're going to manhandle. There's no reason to intimidate somebody you already know you're going to beat. I don't care if that's in your the way you are or whatever. It just I mean, we know nothing will ever happen of it, but the NCAA probably needs to just limit the just sort of like they do when the people dance on an emblem at the pregame. If you go to a away game, you don't dance on an emblem. That's like smacking somebody in the face. You know, it's just poor sportsmanship, and it's never going to be penalized, but it should be recognized that this is unacceptable, and coaches and schools should be fined, not the football team, because that stuff doesn't happen without the coach's knowledge, believe me. And if it did, then that coach has lost control of their team, and this should no longer be a coach.
Yeah, we should next time just do a show on how the NCAA needs to clean up its act. That would be a nice show altogether just by itself.
They're never going to clean up their act. There's too much money in it. It's too much drama. College football is the best sport out there. I know NFL makes way more money, but guess what? That's because they pay everybody. That's the reason their bottom line isn't as big as the NCAA. But thanks for calling in, Robbie. I really appreciate you throwing some questions at me and being on the show and listening. All right, so that was our first real just freebie call-in chat. So I have the NFL left, and then I'll be out of here, everybody. I want to welcome Chopper to the show. It's been a couple weeks since I've seen him, so let's say hey out there. He's mentioning Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, congratulations. You've made it to the NFL, and you're surviving. Good luck against Miami this weekend. I hope they run you ragged, but it's nice to see you doing well. I knew you after watching you in those Division I AA games. I knew you had what it takes. You're a pretty darn good quarterback, and I'm glad that the NFL has your type of person there, proving that the small guys can make it too. So moving on to the NFL, and I believe since we're there, I'll just start off with that game, Baltimore at Miami. Spider, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I know you probably have a couple things to say about some of the NFL games, so just let me know when you want to throw something in there. Baltimore and Miami is a big game. Both teams are 2-3. Miami's at the bottom of the barrel. Baltimore, once again, has a great defense and no offense. And last year they had that they ended up winning the Super Bowl. But the defense is making mistakes, while the Miami team lost a heartbreaker on a – I was watching this game on the internet, just, you know, the little which way they're going and what was the last play. And I was like, they're on the three-yard line with 3 seconds left. They're going to run a quarterback draw. I'm not even watching the game live, and I knew that was the play he was going to call. How could the Dolphins' defense not – why would – if they spread everybody out – and it's the last basic play of the game, how could you not know the quarterback draw is coming? It's the only thing that's going to work. So I was quite pissed when I saw that's how it ended. And I was like, oh, my gosh, my defensive coordinator is fired. I'm never going to deal with him again. But that's a big game. Miami's at home. They're 1-1 at home, and Baltimore's 0-2 on the road. So I would say it's in Baltimore. It's against Baltimore to choose them, but, you know, it should be a good game because it's two defenses going at each other. San Diego at Buffalo. San Diego is basically a couple plays away from being 5-1, yet they don't play like a 5-1 team to me. They really dismantled the Patriots the other night, and that was great. Buffalo is 4-1 and the first place team in the NFC East, and they're doing it based on defense as well. That should be a good game. New Orleans and Carolina. New Orleans 3-3, but 0-2 on the road, and Carolina is coming off they just got killed by Tampa Bay, and it sucked for me because I benched Tampa Bay's defense and put in Miami's defense, and Miami's defense on my fantasy team played so well, yet Tampa's defense did even better, and I was like so angry about that. So, but anyways, I'm still undefeated. I'm 6-0, and I play the other 6-0 team in my league. I'm pretty excited about that, even though Larry Fitzgerald has a bye, which I was very excited when Anquan Boldin was out for a couple weeks. And I'm like, finally, they can just throw to Larry Fitzgerald, and I can, you know, score thousands of points. But that should be a good game. New Orleans, Carolina. This is a must-win for both teams. So Carolina's 3-0 at home, so that should be pretty interesting right there. Can they maintain that perfect record against a resurgent New Orleans team? Minnesota and Chicago, the black and blue game. You got Minnesota, who has managed to make its way to 3-3. I really don't know how they did that, but they're there. Maybe they'll start giving the ball to Adrian Peterson more and continue their winning ways. Chicago, 3-3. I think they're a much better team than 3-3, but I mean, Kyle Orton was the right choice. He's playing well. But they're still managing to lose games, so I just don't get it. Let me see. Indy at Green Bay. Looks like Indy found their identity finally. And here's the excuse they came out with this week. Peyton Manning had two surgeries. He's just now recovering. We didn't tell everybody because, you know, we didn't want everybody to freak out. You could have told people, man, at least fantasy people would have had him on the bench the first 3 weeks. Well, I mean, they're finally performing like the team, and as soon as they do, they lose Joseph and die. So at least they got Dominic Rhodes back, and they should be able to continue that running game and their screen game, and then Peyton continue running him to offense. Green Bay, they need to win. They're just for the sake of that team, they need to continue winning or at least put themselves in line to make the playoffs, because if they miss the playoffs and the Jets make the playoffs, oh boy, that's going to be bad up there. Monday night's game should be an actual good one. Denver at New England. New England's coming off that just bad defeat to San Diego. While Denver, I don't even remember, did they lose? I believe they lost last week. No. Yeah, they did, because every one of my players on my fantasy team lost, and yet I won. So, obviously, if they would have put my fantasy players on one team, we would have won. But we'll just keep it at, you know, those are the big games. Those are my pick six games for the week. I'm not really going to break down any of them too much. It's just, you know, those are the games you probably want to go to a bar, or if you have the DirecTV Sunday ticket, those are the games you probably want to pay attention to. Those will be the good ones, as opposed to Houston and Detroit and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Stay away from those games. You just don't want to get caught up in watching that crap. Spider, anything to add on those?
No, I think you pretty much covered it all.
All right. Well, hey, I did something right, and I covered something to its fullest extent and kept Spiders quiet. It's hard to do. You guys just don't know how talkative she is and how much she's always got to be heard. A couple little tidbits about the NFL. St. Louis and Houston picked up their first wins last weekend, so congratulations, even though one of them was against my Dolphins. Could have just waited a week. It would have been nice with me. And Tennessee is the only unbeaten team left. I believe it has something to do with defense. They lead the league in points scored against. You know, that's the old saying, defense wins championships. And if people can't score on you, they can't win. So while that offense may be much maligned, they're doing enough to get the victories, and that's really all it takes. Vince Young should be back pretty soon. DJ was asking something about here. When did the NWFA add the Georgian regional to the bottom of the site? Yes, I saw that too. So now they have a Florida and Georgia thing. So let me, and like I said, I'm going to see if I can get Catherine on next week or sometime in the near future to describe what that is, because I don't, it looks like just a way to make money for her. So, but anyways, I want to thank everybody out there for talking. Thank you to Robbie Robb for hopping on there and throwing out some questions to me. That was very interesting to be asked some questions about something I may not know a lot about, but since I've been watching most of all college football teams this year, I do know something about that. So that was nice to have that out there. Everybody else, thank you for listening. Thanks for Spider for throwing in your input on the college football games, because I know you love them. Chopper, thanks for hopping in. If you talk to Pop Fox, you know, let him know I said, hey, I haven't seen him or heard from him in a while. I need to get in touch with him about his jersey connection or uniform connection. And then everybody, tryouts, start checking your local teams. Start putting your stuff out there. Fundraise. Remember, raise money. It costs a lot of money to run a football team. And, you know, while we may be coaches and players, I know some owners may be out there listening, you know, push the fundraisers. And don't push for your players to do all the fundraising. You get out there and get the money from other sources so that when you raise the money, you can say to the players, listen, I've done my part to secure the playoffs. You pay your player fees and win the games, the playoffs are paid for. Because that's the most expensive part when you make the playoffs, because you got to travel farther than you did in the regular season to play teams you've never played before. Prepare for it now, people. Prepare like you're going to be in the playoffs at the beginning and before the season. I had my first coaches meeting last Saturday. It should be an interesting season on this end. Thank you, everybody, for listening. BJ, thanks for running the board with a broken finger. Hope it heals better. And just remember, everybody, flag football is way more dangerous than regular football. I've seen more people get injured in flag football than I have in regular football. That or stretching. You know, stretching is another dangerous sport. Some people just don't know how to stretch and can hurt themselves, and it's quite funny to laugh at internally. So, everybody else, you know, don't forget to watch Tramer Show tomorrow, and then on Sundays, the ladies of WFB Talk will have their little SmackDown and all kinds of stuff. So thank you once again, everybody, for listening to my show. I'm Coach Penn. This is Third Long. Let's keep women's football moving forward by working together as much as we can. I know that's quite a difficult thing to ask, but I'm asking it. Thanks. Have a good night, everybody. Bye.